Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd of November, Anno Domini 2014. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benner.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. We should also mention that rumor has it that Steve Ray, although he is one step at, we thought he was...
Yeah,
one really. Step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest.
We heard the sirens.
May actually be heading this way, so we don't know that for true. But if it happens, it'll be a guest appearance.
Yeah, he's filming a special across the hall.
A cameo appearance
by Steve Ray. You know, like in TV shows, they say, with Steve Ray.
Yes.
All right, the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, God bless them, has no public timeline for voting on proposed net neutrality rules, despite pressure from President Barack Obama, God bless him, and some net neutrality advocates. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler, God bless him, declined to give a target date for a net neutrality vote when asked Friday by reporters, saying instead that the agency is working to make sure that any rules would hold up to an almost inevitable court challenge. The big dogs are going to sue regardless of what comes out, Wheeler said. We need to make sure that we have sustainable rules. That starts with making sure that we have addressed the multiplicity of issues that have come along. Wheeler, facing reporter questions after the commission's meeting, said he wants to move forward quickly with net neutrality or open internet rules. But the rules also need to be on firm legal ground. Doesn't that sound so reasonable? We are going to be sued because that's the history, he said. We want those rules to be in place after a court decision. Wheeler declined to say whether he would put out a new net neutrality proposal or seek more public comment on existing proposals. About 4 million people filed comments this year on Wheeler's first net neutrality proposal, which would allow broadband providers to engage in commercially reasonable traffic management. Commercially reasonable traffic management.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
It sounds commercially reasonable. Wheeler
commercially
said...
Commercially reasonable. Does that just mean profitable?
Yes, it's exactly what it means. Wheeler said he wants strong rules. The FCC should pass rules with no blocking, no throttling of apps, no fast lanes. With no discrimination, he said. Earlier this year, U.S. Appeals Court threw out a large portion of net neutrality rules the FCC passed in 2010 after a court challenge from Verizon Communications. Earlier this month, Obama called on the FCC to pass net neutrality rules by reclassifying broadband as a regulated public utility. Gosh, that sounds reasonable. Obama's comments came less than 2 weeks after reports that Wheeler was looking into a so-called hybrid approach that would classify one piece of broadband service as a utility. Obama and millions of U.S. residents who have filed comments with the FCC want strong net neutrality rules. So, are you for or against net neutrality? And why? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. So, net neutrality. I personally am for it. Mainly because of all the millions of startup companies in the world, in America,
yeah,
who rely on internet access to facilitate their business.
Mm-hmm.
If these people have to pay more or get throttled or whatever, that stifles competition.
And as we've said before, you know, I mean, we're almost third world when it comes to the internet because there are so many third world countries out there that offer a lot better services and cheaper.
I get it. Verizon and Comcast and those people can't compete. And so they're afraid. And so they need to have the rules in their favor because otherwise they're going to lose. And I get that. I do. It saddens me for them, of course, but it is the way it is. But I think that we should definitely have net neutrality. It's the right thing to do, although that never works in Washington anyway. Oh, and we have a special guest. In the house today, we have, just for a short while, a cameo appearance.
I'm Steve Ray.
Yeah. But yeah,
Yep. Yeah, my my wife's daughter's getting married today, and my wife suggested that I could come do a little bit of the show.
That was very sweet of her.
Before the wedding.
And this is a first, though.
Yes, she actually suggested
No. We should get a picture of this.
We really should.
In a shirt and tie.
He's in a tie. I will take a picture.
The jacket's in the car.
No, I get that. We're all clearly far underdressed.
And it's a real tie.
Yeah, real tie.
It's not a clip on.
Hide it myself.
Not bad.
I'm taking a picture now. Oh, with Dennis. That's very nice. Here we go. Really? I didn't like
great
that.
Great idea, yeah.
The camera doesn't even want to take the
picture. No, it didn't. Because
it doesn't believe it.
No, it's an Android camera,
it
so it won't take a picture of an iPhone guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But,
What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, literally a lot.
Yeah, there they are. See that? I got two of them. I took two pictures. I just didn't see the flash, but clearly we did not need the flash.
And and camera phones still make the shutter sounding click, even though it's an electronic shutter, isn't it? There's no physical shutter anymore.
Yeah, there is no physical shutter. Did you hear the click? Well, because we got the headphones.
Didn't have the headphones on. I didn't hear it.
We didn't hear that. But we've taken pictures. This makes great radio while we're sitting there.
But it's neutral.
Right.
It's neutral. Listen, if you want to join in the fun, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I personally believe we should regulate it as a utility. I believe it used to be a luxury.
Yep.
But it's become, I believe, a vital service that every citizen needs nowadays.
And here's how you can tell. I work at the Eastman School of Music, and we had a situation early in the semester where the connection to our Wi-Fi was down for just a few hours.
Yep.
Our phones lit up because college-age students coming to school for the first time flipped open their laptop, and suddenly there were no little bars of signal at the top.
Yep.
And they think of it in the same way that we think of water or sewer or any of the other public utilities that you expect. So it's, the same way that you expect there to be a highway department clearing the roads, they expect there to be internet service and good internet service at that.
Yep.
And wasn't one of the things in Wheeler's statement that even if they did classify internet carriers as common carriers, it wouldn't really change anything, except now the FCC would have enforcement ability, because that's what the court ruled. FCC tried to enforce net neutrality, and the court said you don't have the authority over internet services. You only have that over common carriers.
Right. And if I would love to see them say that internet is a common carrier, is just as just in the same class as telephone.
Right.
You know, anybody can come to town and start a phone company, but there are rules you live under because it's a common carrier thing.
Yeah. The major issue is they have to fight this, because if they don't, they won't look as good to Wall Street investors. Wall Street hates publicly traded utilities. They call those the grandma stocks. Those are the stocks that you buy and hold so that you can use them, and they don't fluctuate as much. Now, people who are
Wasn't that the original idea of the stock market? Get something and hold it until it matures 20 years from now, and then cash it in? Apparently not anymore.
Well,
now.
Yeah, bonds maybe. The thing about regulated utilities is that the pricing is regulated too. So other than gaining more subscribers and trying to multiply your revenues that way, you don't have a great way to expand on big projects and lots of profit. So Wall Street is not excited about internet services being regulated that way.
And didn't one of the big companies, was it AT&T, I think I read, said if this does happen, we're going to pull out of the internet business?
Fine.
Because they're already regulated as a common carrier for the telephone business.
Right, and they're not making any money on telephone.
They're not making enough money.
Right. Right, it's never about making money, it's how much money you make.
And a couple of billion isn't enough.
Right, and that's the problem with publicly traded companies. It's not how good are you, it's what did you do for me in the last 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, and so consequently you've got investors who are clamoring for more money today, and companies who are saying, oh my God, we've got investors clamoring for more money today.
There was, well, and that was the big thing for a while, is day traders. I buy in the morning and sell in the afternoon.
Right.
Well, now, what's the new word? I buy now and sell it in 10 minutes.
Right.
Right.
It's less than day trading.
Micro
trading, yeah.
Micro trading, exactly. Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Roy from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Roy. What's up?
Good afternoon. I'm not a legal expert on this, but we were talking about net neutrality.
Yep.
And one of the issues, I believe, if the internet was considered to be a common carrier, is the price is going to double with all the add-on fees that they put on the common carriers. I believe that with their setup the way they are now, they don't have all these fees. If you have a regular
they have all different
bill,
fees.
Yeah.
You take a look at it and your price almost doubles.
Well, except that's not necessarily going to be the case. The fees are put on by the carriers themselves. The government doesn't impose those fees on them.
Well, some of them they do.
Very few of them, though. And most of the fees, you know, they charge you a fee to send you a bill. That's not a government fee. They charge you a fee.
There are some local fees, but yeah. I think that there'll be more fees added on if they go to common carrier. That's what I think.
Well, like I said, I'm not an expert either, but I'm pretty sure it hasn't been the case in the past. But we'll find out, I guess, one way or the other.
One way or the other.
Yep. Thanks,
Thank
Roy.
You.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there are extra fees imposed by the government. Certainly there will be a fee, the regulation fee. The cost of regulating them will be passed on.
Well, if you look at your bill now, there's all these little fees at the bottom.
Right.
That don't make any sense at all. And you call and ask, and they say, oh, yeah, it's a fee. Well, yeah, but what does it mean? Yeah, the franchise fee. Well, that's because it's an independent franchise. So why do I have to pay a fee for that?
Right. Why am I paying for you to franchise?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And you know, there's lots of those little fees. None of them are regulated. None of them are enforced or asked for by the government.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I think one of the issues in the public's mind is that net neutrality is kind of a nebulous term. We want the net to be neutral. What does that mean? We want everyone to have access to the net. We don't want anyone to have to pay extra just because they're doing more content. And the Netflix mess with Comcast was one of the big fallouts of that. Netflix pays its own internet provider for service.
Right.
Comcast came along and said, well, a lot of your traffic is coming to Comcast, so you have to pay Comcast too.
Right.
And Netflix.
Well, and there's your conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Right? Because Comcast
offers streaming video.
Right. And so what they're saying is you compete with us and we don't like it, so we're going to extract money from you so that we feel better about it.
And most of the ISPs have what are called peering agreements at their borders. So Comcast takes Time Warner's traffic and Time Warner takes Comcast traffic and they call it a wash. Netflix has become so popular and there's so much Netflix traffic that the ISPs want to get paid again for the Netflix traffic. And in many cases, Netflix has put servers in an ISP central office because that makes it better for their users. In fact, so the problem is if Netflix didn't pay Comcast, then people using Comcast internet would suffer poor Netflix video quality.
Or perhaps no.
Right. And they wouldn't blame Comcast. They would blame Netflix. Oh, Netflix isn't working. I'll cancel my subscription.
Right.
So Netflix caved in, paid them money. I still don't know if they got to put a server in the Comcast closet yet, but they had to pay extra money for Comcast
traffic.
But
now there's a precedent there. Now what happens, of course, is Google's doing streaming video. Yep. Amazon's doing streaming video. Hulu's doing streaming video.
And those are all established brands. What if we started doing national streaming video and then we have to pay more?
Right. And that's the argument that people who are for net neutrality say. They say that because this might happen. There's it's harder.
Yeah, YouTube may not exist.
New people to break into the business, and that's restraint of trade and all the legal terms are. Listen, we're gonna take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites. It is member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, this may be the most crowded episode of Sound Bites you've ever heard.
Yeah, really?
Three of us don't fit in this well, particularly when one of them is me. And now we've added Dennis, but he's lean and mean, so he slips between.
Thank you. That's so nice of you to say.
Yeah.
Especially compared to the rest of us.
Hey!
Yeah, Dave, you're looking pretty good here, Dave.
You are. Yeah, Dave's looking pretty good.
That heart attack really did something for you.
Yeah, Dave! I've lost 25-plus pounds, and you can't tell.
Well,
for you, 25 pounds is a significant portion of your body weight. For me, it's lunch.
You know, I couldn't believe it, but back in the day, when, matter of fact, we did our 20th.
Yeah.
That's when I found out, it was later that year, I found out, my cousin came up to me and said, "Boy, Enright, you put on some weight." And I went down, you know, when I got home, stepped on the scale. I was at 240 pounds.
Yeah, I was 240 pounds at six. So.
And then, you know, since then, I've been able, thank goodness, to lose it. And like you say, the heart attack and prostate cancer definitely. Two ways to get it off of you.
I want neither of those ways. Thank you very much.
I don't advise it. Let me clear you.
Yeah, when I was having my gallbladder out, I asked the surgeon, while you're in there, you know.
Yes, just take a little off
a
the
shop
side.
Back, will you? All right, back to the news. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, God bless them, is seeking assurances from Apple that it will prevent sensitive health data collected by its upcoming smartwatch and other mobile devices from being used without owner's consent. Apple representatives have met on multiple occasions with FTC officials in recent months to stress that it will not sell its users' health data to third-party entities such as marketers or allow third-party developers to do so. Apple said it works closely with regulators around the world, including the FTC, to describe built-in data protections for its services. We've been very encouraged by their support, Apple spokesrobot Trudy Miller said. Apple developed its new HealthKit platform, which I keep trying to read as HeathKit because that's where I'm my era, which manages data from mobile health apps to give consumers control over how their information is used and shared. We designed HealthKit with privacy in mind, said Mueller, said Trudy. There are no indications that the FTC intends to launch a formal investigation or inquiry into the matter, but the dialogue underscores the agency's interest in how the increasing wealth of consumer-generated health and fitness data will be safeguarded. The FTC is paying particularly close attention to Apple's upcoming smartwatch, which can track a user's pulse and potentially store health-related information. Apple hopes its upcoming Apple Watch and HealthKit platform will become the linchpins in a broad push into mobile healthcare, a potentially lucrative field that rivals Google and Samsung are also exploring. FTC Commissioner Julie Brill in May said the agency is concerned about the risks of health data that flows outside of a medical context, such as information collected via wearables and mobile health apps. The agency also requested that Congress enact legislation to make the practices of data brokers more visible. Most data that consumers store in mobile health apps are not covered by privacy rules known as HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, HIPAA, but the FTC has stressed that these data are highly sensitive and is keen on investigating how any consumer-generated data gathered are stored, exchanged, and protected. So, do you worry about your smartwatch blabbing your health data? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I'm only interested in tracking that data if I can get a discount on my health insurance premiums.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
And the danger is the other side of that. If you know you have a big, you know, high calorie, high cholesterol lunch, your health insurance rate goes up that day.
Yeah, right. Right. Health insurance by the hour.
Yeah,
exactly.
I've got some real time feedback here. I've got a text from my wife that says maybe we should hold off on that Fitbit. She's got a birthday coming up soon, and we were talking about maybe checking into one of those. But maybe she'll think it over.
Well, Steve has one of something.
I've got a Strive. I've done 1,568 steps today.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
That's not bad at all. You can do those with your watch now. You can do those with your smart with your phone. Dennis, you're a big bike guy, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I the watch stuff that I do has been around for a while. A company named Garmin, who's well known for its GPS stuff, also has other sensors that you can put on. So In the bike world, we like to measure cadence, which is sort of like the tachometer for your feet.
Nice.
And we measure things like power. You can measure how many watts you're producing. You can measure your heart rate. And there are great websites where you can take this data and connect your watch to a USB connection and upload it, and then see very interesting graphs and compare how you're doing over the season, what your fitness level is like, and compare it against your friends and other people as well.
Right. So the question becomes, again, what's the deal with those data? Who what happens to them when you send them to that website?
Right. So when the website that I use is called Strava, and that information stays locked behind a password. It is, you opt in with a check mark. They have a special thing that they do called segments. Segments are like a local hill, and you'll want to compare how quickly you get up that hill to everybody else who's in your town. So right. they essentially turn a local hill and put a little high score chart next to it. And if you're the fastest, then you're the top of the heap there, and you're called what's called the KOM, or the King of the Mountain. And nice. And you get a little crown cute. Next to your name and right. so forth and so on. But they use that locally at their place. They make it available via an API, but that's all in the terms and conditions that you look through when you sign up.
Right. Well, but if you've got one of those Fitbits or one of those Strives or whatever,
yeah.
and it's recording that you've got a fast pulse rate and high blood pressure and whatever else they can figure out,
yeah.
that's probably not stuff you want spewed out over the internet to other people.
I think of this. The thing is, health is about who you are, and it's not always about the choices you make. It's sometimes about the genetics of your family and,
right.
and where you came from.
And talking about, you know, health and healthcare and all that, you know, you guys got it easy. Because, you know, when you're at a
business, you hear that?
When you're at a business, they say, okay, here's this health provider, and this is the insurance we're going to give to you guys.
Right, right, right.
Now you come to my world.
Yeah.
Being retired and trying to pick out, because it's this time of year, they always go from October sure. to December 7th.
Yep. Open enrollment.
Inundated with so many packets of information,
yeah.
trying to decide what group I want to go with.
Right.
Based upon all these statistics, and here's what this is going to offer, and this one and that one.
Right.
You want to talk about information overload?
Yeah, it's remember artificial intelligence? We were
Dude.
Teaching computers how to play chess 30 years ago.
Sure.
Well, what we need is an expert system that pulls in your information and then gives you recommendations on what plan would be best. Or better yet,
start writing
customizes a plan that have the insurance company build custom plans that aren't just cookie cutter where they offer yeah. like four or five different options.
Well,
they have them build something and then make you a quote and say, well, based on what you're likely to need, here's what we can offer you, and it's customized directly for you.
Basically, that's what I did do. I found this 1-800 number, I called it, and sat on the phone with them. Because, like I say, all these packets and everything else that I was getting in was just too much. I mean, because you got to go page after page, try to compare this group with that, this plan and that, within the group. And it's like, so this one person, I was able to sit there and just talk and go through what I need, and it's only for a year, and you can always change, but it was great to have this one person and sort some of this stuff out. See, yeah. It was a pain in the butt.
Yep, yep, yep.
My wife and I recently had to do this. I got a new job fairly recently, and we were getting ready to enroll. What they decided to do, their benefits group, is they farmed out the explanation part of their website to this company called Jellyvision. Jellyvision is a company that in the 90s built the You Don't Know Jack franchise.
Yeah, doesn't that make a game?
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yes. Good so to they, know.
It is perfect.
So you're asking the company that doesn't know Jack how to answer your question.
No.
Oops.
But it turned out great because they gave you a little, it was an interview that they said, okay, well, you know, how many times do you expect you're going to need to go to the dentist? And how many kids do you have? And how many times do you think they'll need a doctor's visit? And how many times do you think you'll need a doctor's visit? And how much coverage do you think you'll need for these other things? And then they took that info and they spelled it out. And they said, well, here are the plans we offer. And based on what you told us, here's what it would cost for each one of those. Now, based on your desire to spend as little as possible, it looks like, you know, plan number two here was the right choice
nice.
For you. And it was really, really well done. And I hope that something like that would become available more broadly.
We
I had to laugh because that was one of the questions that was asked of me. Do I plan on having any more kids? And I go, seriously?
Didn't plan on having the ones I had.
Yeah, right.
But at 66 years old.
Check, please.
Yeah, okay. Really.
Yeah.
I'll pass on that one.
Shirley and I went through similar questions when we were signing up for insurance. I'm kind of apolitical, but the Affordable Health Care Act didn't seem very affordable. So, you know, we found a plan. It was $500 a month for the family. That's not too bad. $4,000 deductible.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And so basically nothing's covered until you pay that $4,000.
Right. That's exactly right.
A year.
Out of the pocket.
Yeah. Right, right.
So that didn't work.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Thanks for waiting, Sal. What's up?
Hey, guys.
Sal, are you sitting in a barrel?
I look. Can you hear me?
Ish, yeah. Go ahead.
Close your car window.
You guys are fading in and out. I look forward to the smartwatch because it does actually measure many other things, and it's more useful than just, you know, health-related stuff.
Right.
I'm not worried about the information going anywhere.
Oh, good for you. That's good. Yeah, I'm interested in a couple of the smartwatches. I really like the Moto 360. There's a case for it now that turns it into a pocket watch, which actually impressed me.
Oh, that's interesting.
But, I haven't got one myself yet.
No, I think it's going to be something in the future that, you know, you're not going to be able to stop it because it fits. Who else had it? Nike's had it. Sony's had stuff.
Right, they're all going to have it. The question is, how well are they protecting my private data?
And, well, and is it private once you allow them to measure it?
Right.
Exactly. And
who owns those data?
You have to give up the privacy for some security.
Right, right, right.
Well, and even now, you end up sharing your data with your doctor's office, so everyone in the office knows. It goes to the insurance companies. It goes to, you know, other doctors if you have specialists, you know, the x-rays. So your information is already out there quite a bit inside the medical community. So the danger is how far outside the medical community does it go?
I think it goes out too far, even in the medical community anyway. You know, this whole HIPAA situation, you're supposed to have a lot more privacy even on the check-in. You know, they're supposed to have isolated areas, and yet you look at half the offices, they're wide open. The glass is virtually useless because you can hear right through it.
There's an old Monty Python.
They're using full names when it's supposed to be, you know, either first or last name.
Yeah.
Nobody follows HIPAA the way they should.
There's an old Monty Python sketch from, what, the 70s, where John Cleese is a pharmacist, and he walks out, and, all right, who's got the boil on the bum? And someone raises their hand, and he tosses them their drugs. All right, who's got the clap? And tosses them their drugs.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not too far from that sometimes, too.
You're not kidding.
Yep, it's terrible.
All right, thanks, Sal.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And we're only seeing the first couple generations of these devices. What's it going to be like in 5 years when we've got the 10th generation of the device, and what can it do for us? We had a guy that worked in our office for a while that had diabetes, and he had a little computer strapped to his chest, and it knew what he was eating, and we told it what he was eating, and it gave him the right medicine. And so that's what I want. You know, I'm eating a sandwich. All right, I need a little bit more of this, or, you know, my heart's fluttering a little bit, call the ambulance for me.
Right.
If you think those inkjet printer cartridges are expensive, wait till you see the insulin charges and the anticoagulant charges. And
I've never actually used an inkjet printer in the last 20 years because of that very reason, the cost. They're nice, but they are awful expensive.
One of the things that I've been following is, because I've got a teenage driver in my house right now, is insurance companies that let you put a data collection unit on the car and that keeps track of, you know, jackrabbit starts and crazy, you know, high G turns and lots of things that indicate that your driver may not be driving as safely as you think they ought to. And the idea is that they will bring down the insurance rates if you can prove that your driver is, you know, a good student and has these driving habits and stops at all the stop signs with full stops and in general is a responsible person, because insurance companies are not going to they make a lot of money off responsible people who never file a claim, but
right.
But they're in a lot of competition with other companies. And if my health data can be used to advantageously for me, then I'm very interested. But I've yet to see any particular company saying, you know, we're going to offer that.
I have seen commercials for a couple of insurance companies that you can put their tracker on your car, and they will adjust your car rates.
Right.
It doesn't. Right. It doesn't say just the kids. It says your driving in general.
Right.
And,
right.
And most cars these days have a data port that you can tap into and see the data yourself.
Right. Exactly. All right. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, sound bites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Sherry from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Sherry. What's up?
Yeah, I have a question about computerized vehicles. I heard on the news this morning that people are at risk if they have these type of vehicles of your information getting out and, you know, viruses and things like that. I'd like to know how that works. How that can affect you.
Well, there's already a risk in many cars because they have computers, so many computers in them already. There was an exploit of the tire pressure monitoring system. A lot of cars, in fact, I've got three warning lights on my car now because it's cold, the air pressure drops, and I have a low pressure. But there's a little sensor in your tire, and it's Bluetooth, and it talks to your car computer to tell you what the tire pressure is. Someone figured out a way to hack into that sensor from another car sitting next to it because Bluetooth is a radio.
Mm-hmm.
So there have already been exploits of the car systems we currently have, and car companies are starting to be aware that there is a security implication. They've been trying to make sure that the driving electronics are completely separated from all of the other electronics, so there's no way for, say, that tire pressure monitor system to, suddenly break the car or turn the steering wheel. But those are the risks we're just finding out as we get more and more computerized in our cars.
So you say they're trying to find out means they haven't accomplished that yet?
Or? Well, they don't. A lot of times the car companies don't know what the problems are going to be. That's sort of the problem. And they're hardening their equipment so that theoretically someone who gets into the car's computer can't take over the braking and the accelerating. But that data is already being collected. We were talking about that in the previous break. There are insurance companies that offer dongles, basically a black box for your car, that will measure all that information, and you can, and theoretically they use that to lower your bill if you're a good driver. But that data is supposed to be only one way. So it measures your acceleration, it measures your turning radius, and it doesn't allow that to be controlled by the computer. The real big worry people are having is self-driving cars and what happens if the computer crashes. Well, you have to have a person in the driver's seat just in case for that. But if there's an accident with a self-driving car, who do you blame? Because you weren't driving, so you blame the car company. Who was it? Was it BMW? One of the big car companies and their self-driving cars have said they will take on insurance liability if there's an accident while the car is driving itself. But that doesn't stop hackers from breaking in, and that's just like our computer. Well, unfortunately, hopefully better than our computers, the right. Manufacturers will be able to find those problems before they become apparent and fix them at the factory.
Right. So, Sherry, we haven't seen much of that sort of thing yet, but there is always the possibility that it's coming.
So it has nothing to do with, like, if you got a wireless connection in your car, for the internet. It's just the car, it's electronics itself, right?
Well, but one of the ways they could get in is through that wireless connection. See, having the electronics in your car is one thing. Having access to it from the outside world requires Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or something else, and then a path from that Wi-Fi antenna into the device itself. And so one of the things Steve said is they're isolating the driving computers from the computers that control, say, your iPod or that sort of thing. So by separating those two, somebody might be able to take over your iPod. Maybe, and then make it play a different song, I suppose. I'm not sure what. But it doesn't have any effect on the car itself.
Well, if your Bluetooth is connected, like from your phone, does that make you vulnerable, too? I mean...
Well, like I said, if it's connected to the entertainment system, not the driving system.
Okay.
So someone could make a phone call on your phone. In fact, I know someone where they had two cars, and, you know, husband and wife, And they were driving each other's cars for some reason. And the phone rang in one car, and the other car answered it because that was the car the phone is usually in.
Oh, and they were close
and they were close enough to each other, yeah.
That's funny.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
That's pretty funny.
I guess I better check with a manufacturer to find out how secure it is.
That's right. And what you're asking them is how separate are the driving computer from the – is the driving computer – from the entertainment computer or the phone, I guess, computer. That they probably call it the entertainment system.
Okay.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
Good luck, Sherry.
All right.
Just what we need, something else to worry about.
Right. But you know what?
And that's why Commander Adama didn't network any of the computers on the Galactica.
Thank you for sharing that. But you know what? Good for Sherry that she thought of that and that she's that it's something that concerns her. Too many of us don't pay any attention to that sort of security situation, and I'm glad that she did.
And that tire pressure hack was shown at DEF CON 4 years ago, which is a hacking conference.
Right.
So presumably the manufacturers have fixed the problem.
Yeah, we hope so.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm fairly comfortable with computers. Until it gets to the wireless networks, I am horrible with wireless networks. So I have, I'm running Windows 7 Ultimate on a white box, and I have a, well, you can do this. What I'm trying to do is connect my printers via my Wi-Fi to basically the network, and the it's an Asus 66U Wi-Fi, and it has two USB connections for me to plug printers, plug something in. But I want to do printers.
Well, does your printer already have Wi-Fi built in?
No, the printer doesn't.
Okay, so that's what the USB port allows. A lot of new printers today have Wi-Fi built in, which makes it a little bit easier.
Okay, well, I have my old black and white laser. I'm sure does not.
Right, but it plugs into it plugs into USB. So you want to plug it in to what is essentially? Do they say there's an actual print server in the router?
Yeah, there is.
Because some of them you plug printers in, some of them you plug hard drives in, and some you can do both.
I tried to do the automatic setup. They have a thing where you can automatically set up this. And the response I get is contact Windows Direct to install printer drivers.
What model printer is it?
Well, I have two. I have a Brother MFC 7340. That's a very old black and white. And I have a newer HP LJ300-400 color.
It may be that neither of those printers are supported by that Asus box. Dennis found a chart on the Asus website. We'll post that to the website, our website. And it looks like not all printers are supported. The web is down again?
Yeah.
What model number was the router again?
The router is the Asus N66U.
Yeah. If you, what was your Google search? Asus 66U USB printer was the Google search, and that brought up,
it's the second link
that comes in. So not all printers are supported, And even within a specific printer, not all features are supported. And so it's a matter of the printers of the print server basically in that router supporting the printer.
All right. So I mean, I hear about all these things: print from the cloud, join the network, and you can, you know. So I have a desktop, a laptop, a tablet. Basically, right now, if I want to print something that's on my laptop, I carry it over to the printers and physically plug the printer into a USB port.
Right. One of the things that you can do if your print server that's built into the router does not support the printers you have, you can plug those printers into the desktop computer and share them from there to the other computers on your network.
So the desktop computer then becomes the print server.
Right.
As well as being usable as a regular desktop.
Right, which I basically, they're plugged into the desktop right now. If I want to use a laptop, I unplug it and plug it in there. But I don't keep the desktop on all the time, and if, you know, that's part of the reason you have the laptop.
And that would be the downside of that. You would have to keep the desktop on all the time. Although, of course, you could put the screensaver on. It's not going to use up a lot of electricity that way, but or rather, you could turn the monitor off.
Right.
In order to do what you want to do, you have to have some form of print server. Newer printers have one built into the printer itself, and it's all wireless, and you can get it to work fairly easily. Older ones, you need a print server that will support that printer. It sounds like your router will not, so your next choice is to use your computer, your desktop computer, to be your print server, but that would require leaving it on all the time.
And the latter, using my desktop as a print server, is that easy to hook up? Or?
Well, once you've got the printers running right on the server, then all you have to do is share those printers to the network.
Okay.
And that's just a checkbox.
When you said running properly on a server, they run fine on the desktop.
That's what I'm saying. You've got the right drivers and all that yada yada.
It's configured correctly.
Yeah,
once it's configured correctly, sharing it out is easy.
You go to your printer's control panel, right-click on the printer, and choose sharing.
Yep. Okay. And then that way your other machines will see that when it goes to look for available printers on the network.
All right.
Or $100 for a new wireless printer.
Right.
Actually, there are wireless print servers you can get for old printers, and they're about $100.
Yeah. Wow. Right. I don't want it that badly.
Right. But hooking it up to your desktop, leaving the desktop on all the time, but the monitor turned off, for example, certainly do it.
How new is the desktop?
The desktop is probably 3 years old.
It may have a feature called Wake on LAN. So you can put the desktop to sleep, and then when you print from another computer, it'll wake up because it's seeing network information. Maybe.
All right.
That gets a little sneakier, but it's possible.
That's in the BIOS, but it's possible.
All right. Well, I mean, it's a white box, so I'll have to check to see what
right,
I can do.
Right,
that's
right,
in the
right,
BIOS?
Right. Yep.
What I'd recommend for your next router purchase is to get a printer that automatically has a wired network port on it, and then connect that with a cable to your router if you've got a free port. That's far easier to configure. There's far less to go wrong. I love a nice copper connection between devices because it's pretty obvious if something is not working correctly that it's usually not the physical connection. When you start dealing with wireless things, there are a lot of question marks that enter into the equation that you have to try and account for. But when it comes time to pick your next one, a wired printer with a wired network jack is a good choice.
That's always the trade-off, is that wired networking is much more efficient, much more stable, but wireless is so much more convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that long a walk, and I can print them all, you know, but it's a pain in the butt.
No, I get that. I just set up my father-in-law's MX922 wireless Canon printer, and it was like a four-second setup, but... again, it's a much, much, much newer printer. It was designed to be wirelessly connected to the network. With older printers, you set them up on a computer that then becomes your print server. And once they're running correctly there, then sharing them out is as Steve said, just the checkbox.
You remember configuring Novell print servers?
I do.
Ancient days?
Oh, that was unbelievable.
I do. I also remember writing hex codes into a file for WordPerfect to connect to printers. But that's what you'll need to do. I'm sorry.
One more quick question on the same subject. I've gone to my the printer thing. I've right-clicked on it, and I don't see where I share to network.
Are you in the printer config thing where you just see the list of your two printers?
Correct.
And you right-clicked on it and...
Open new window, see what's printing, set as default, printing preferences, printing properties, shortcut, troubleshoot, remove, and full properties.
It's different under Windows 7, of course. It's probably in full properties. There's, well, wait, is printer sharing even installed by default on Windows 7 now? Probably.
Okay, open devices... hold on. We got to take a quick break, but stay on the line and we'll do this when we come back. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, Steve from Greece, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but Steve is going to be patient and stay on the line, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of what we think of as the longest running and most exciting and a whole bunch of other stuff computer show in the known universe. I believe Steve Ray is hearing the police sirens, so he'll probably take off in just a minute.
Yeah, he's getting awful anxious and moving around here.
I know it. He may be gone taking the class with him because he's got the suit and the tie on as opposed to us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites. I'm member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we still, I hope... have Steve from Greece on the line. You still there, Steve?
I am still here.
All right. So what you can do is click the Start button, right? Yep. From the Start menu, open Devices and Printers.
Yep.
Right-click the printer you want to share. Click Printer Properties.
And under Sharing.
And under the Sharing tab, select Share This Printer.
Yep. And both of them are set up. I also found it during the break.
Oh, there you go. All right, then.
And advanced, there's nothing to do on advanced. Just says always available and you're fine.
There you go.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you for keeping me on the line during the break.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
All right. Have fun.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah, it was nice.
I love it when they can... when callers can find their own answer during the break.
Yes, we love
that. It saves us a lot of work.
The one thing I'd like to know, though, since we're, you know, it'll be after the fact, but this coming Thursday is, of course, Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Still?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. They're still doing that.
And I'm wondering how many folks are going to be getting up at Oh Dark 30 on that Black Friday to go out and do shopping, and shopping for what?
Well, some stores are open on Thursday now. We were talking about Target and I think Walmart have a 50-inch TV for $199.
Yeah.
But it starts Thursday at 5 p.m., and they have one in stock probably.
Yeah, probably.
But I actually did see a list of stores that are closed on Thursday
and
letting their employees go home.
Yes, that's the way it should be.
That is the way it should be. I mean, also, I am avoiding any store that plays Christmas music until Friday.
Thank you. It has. I strolled through the mall a couple weekends ago when they had just put everything out, and I couldn't believe that it was out. We just had gotten the trick-or-treat costumes off the kids, it seems like.
Yep.
I hope our store gets a new playlist. Dude, for the past two Christmases, I have had to hear four different versions of a Marshmallow Christmas.
You just want those
moly.
And at one point in time, they played three versions of it back to back.
You got
to
inject a little Jingle Bell Dogs or something.
That's right.
Ruff, ruff, ruff. You know that one.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they've got the same stupid playlist.
Yeah.
Change it up. Hello. They've been writing Christmas songs for decades. Pick from some of those others.
Yeah.
You could go through every one of them, play them once, and probably go through the whole Christmas season and not hit a repeat.
I got an announcement that Pandora had opened up their Christmas playlist thing. I almost threw the phone across the room. Yeah. It's not even Thanksgiving. Yeah. I don't want to hear about a Christmas playlist.
Unacceptable.
No, I mean, back in the day, and everybody knows I'm older than dirt because I invented it.
Yes.
But Christmas did not start until Thanksgiving morning at the end of Macy's Day Parade.
That's right.
And
that's
true. Santa came down at the end.
That was the whole point.
That was the official start of Christmas. And even when I had my house back on Roby, I used to decorate. I had this blue spruce tree.
Yeah, I remember.
And that thing was a good 20, 25 foot tall. And I had it all with lights on it. And I would put the lights on it during Halloween.
Get right. out the scissor lift.
And I'd sit there. No, I had this pole. I could sit there and get it up to the top and then walk around. And Lori, my late wife, used to sit there and go, are you getting dizzy? No, wait a minute. You're already dizzy enough.
Yeah, right.
So you did touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. And I got them all on. And we would quick turn them on just to make sure they worked and then turn them off. Right. They didn't get plugged in until Thanksgiving night.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and that was the whole point why Macy's, the department store, had the parade in the first place, was to draw attention to themselves and to have a spectacle. And suddenly Santa's there at the end waving and saying, hey, let's all go into Macy's.
Yeah. Hello. There's two holidays, which I'm sorry, manufacturers should not, you know, any store should not violate.
Right.
And that's Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Right.
The other days, if, you know, they want to do it, that's fine. But hello, Thanksgiving and Christmas are 2 days that you should be allowed to stay home and be with your family.
I completely agree.
Yep.
I mean, that's the whole problem. They say, what's wrong with the U.S.? That's the whole problem. We've gotten so wrapped up in sales and everything
and
else.
We've pulled away.
We've pulled away from the family. It's all about, oh, well, they've got to have this toy or they've got to have that one. So I've got to be out there at dark 30 and forget it. I can't be around here to celebrate Thanksgiving with you.
Teach them how to play a card game at the table instead.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of family, I've got to go watch my stepdaughter get married. So
see you
guys next week.
Have a
wonderful Thanksgiving. And
you too.
The podcast won't be up this afternoon.
Yeah, you think? You're going to actually be a little busy then?
Hopefully tomorrow. We'll see.
Yeah, there you go. You're up to date so far. We'll let you slack off one day.
Yeah.
Our blessings
good to
the
you,
new
Steve.
Couple.
Drive carefully. Have fun. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
Not to him, to the couple.
Well, yeah.
Well, right. To the happy couple. Yeah,
That's steep.
By proxy.
Yeah. Right, exactly. All right, let me read a news item while we're waiting for you to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0400.
Yeah, let us know if you're going to go be crazy enough to go out on Black Friday.
And what you're planning to get.
What's hot on your list?
That you couldn't home in your pajamas and order online.
Or that you couldn't order this week instead of next week.
Right, exactly. Google said Friday that we'll offer new Chromebook buyers a free terabyte of Google Drive storage for 2 years, which at present rates would be worth almost $240.
Okay.
On the surface, there's really nothing more to it other than the offer's expiration on January 1, 2015. The 1 terabyte deal also matches that of Microsoft, which is bundling 1 year of Office 365 personal on laptops like the $200 HP Stream 11. Office 365 personal originally shipped with, you guessed it, 1 terabyte
of
free OneDrive storage, though the company recently sweetened that deal even further. What this means to you, with freebies like Office 365 subscriptions and additional cloud storage, Microsoft and Google have been providing subsidies of a sort to their hardware partners. The ultimate goal, of course, is to lock in customers to a particular ecosystem.
Totally.
Google has traditionally offered freebies with new Chromebooks, including a 1 terabyte drive bundle that shipped with the Chromebook Pixel, good for 3 years, which is a heck of a Chromebook. In 2013, when Google launched the Pixel, 1 terabyte of drive storage was $50 a month. Even though the Pixel cost close to $1,500, the drive freebie represented a sweet $1,800 bundle that came with a $1,500 laptop. That's not a bad deal.
Wait, 50 a month times 12 months is $1,800?
I don't know. That's okay. What they said.
All right. Wasn't a math major either.
I wasn't a math major either. I don't know.
All right. So it's sorry.
More like...
Carry on.
Never mind. New Chromebooks that... Well, you get a discount for buying a year.
Oh, okay.
New Chromebooks that qualify for the current 1 terabyte drive offer cost as little as $199. In both cases, Microsoft and Google ask you to re-up at the end of the subscription period.
Of course.
If your existing storage exceeds the capacity under your new subscription, they won't erase your existing files. You just aren't able to add new files until your storage falls below your new limit.
Yep, we're seeing that from a lot of companies. Dropbox is doing the same thing, where you can go over that, and they won't nuke anything, which is very honorable of them, they also won't let you save anything new.
Right. Still, Microsoft and Google are running out of room to compete. Microsoft recently eliminated all OneDrive storage limits for OneDrive customers, a trick Google had previously pulled with both Drive for Work and later for universities. It's likely the two competitors will continue to push cloud storage even more aggressively, lowering the paid threshold for unlimited storage and offering more and more online storage to users who hold nothing more than a Microsoft or Google username. While this may end up bloodying the noses of two of technology's giants, consumers clearly benefit. Limited cloud storage is quickly becoming a thing of the past, with companies apparently willing to throw gobs of it at new customers to get them hooked. So, is a terabyte of cloud storage enough to entice you into a $200 Chromebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
So this is Google stepping up to the plate. The thing that I notice is that there seem to be four major players. You've got your Apple and your Microsoft, and you've got your Google and your Amazon.
Right.
And they all live in the phone world. They all live in the tablet world. They all live in, well, some degree in the computer world. They're all trying to sell you something, and they all want to be the first place you think of when computers come to mind.
Right.
And this is one of the ways, one of the avenues that they can use to offer you something of value. The good news is for them, hard drive space has never been cheaper, and it's not getting any more expensive.
Right.
So they can continue to offer lots and lots of space.
Right.
And with the off chance that after a couple of years, you're going to start paying rent for your data, and just like you'd pay a self-storage place to store all those, you know,
right,
old albums that you don't listen to anymore, and your old college beanbag chair and all those other things.
Right.
If they can start getting rent payments on that stuff, more power to them.
Two things I really like about Google's storage. First is the data, I think they call it takeout. Where you can download any of your data anytime you want. They zip it up for you and send it right to you.
Right.
Because they say your data are your data and never the twain shall meet or whatever it is. The second thing I really like about it is that if you save something in their format.
In Google's format.
Right, in Google Docs format for text and Google Sheets format for spreadsheets, it doesn't count against your storage.
Yeah.
So I've got truly thousands of documents up there.
Sure. Well, and it's all compressible XML and costs them next to nothing to store. So
exactly. So
there's
not
no reason
for that.
Yeah, there's no reason why they can't offer that to you.
Yep.
It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it really is. We got to get, and of course, anything you upload, you can auto convert to Google's format. So,
true.
You know, I've got almost 1,000 of my newspaper columns. and they all go up there and take up zero space in terms of my storage.
Right. Well, yeah.
Limit.
And it's a lot like, you know, a couple of years ago we talked about cell phones and iPads, and if you bought a bunch of apps for this particular iPad, you know, say you've got $30 or $40 worth of apps, then that becomes one of the costs it takes to transition away from that ecosystem.
Right.
And Google and Amazon and Apple with its iCloud service and iCloud Drive. And Microsoft are all trying to get you camp.
Right. But Google is also saying, you know, all of them are saying, I mean, I'm from my Chromebook, I can I can log into iCloud, I can log into OneDrive, uh-huh. I can do whatever I want. So they really want you to be part of their ecosystem from wherever you go.
Sure.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi guys. Way off topic here. I needed your help with something real quick. Several months back, we were talking about having difficulty hearing voices and whatnot through the TV system, and you guys, Dave was mentioning like a soundbar type of technology, yeah. And yep. I need to research this more, and if you guys can give the names of your shops, if you have any, so I can, it's for a Christmas gift, so I got to learn more about this.
Well, what I did is I wound up, with the help of a friend doing some research. Because I'll admit it, I'm 66 and I am starting to lose hearing in my one left ear.
The left ear?
Yeah, the one left ear is compared to my other left ear.
The other left ear is all right.
No, it's because some folks sit there and say, I thought you said it was bad in your left ear.
What?
And they keep coming over to my right. They go, no, that's my other left ear.
I got it.
So, anyways, I wound up going with the LG soundbar. And it just, it's a sound bar, and it adds more bass because the bass unit is wireless. So you can kind of move that all over. But it has enhanced the TV listening experience that before I was cranking it up really loud, the TV, to hear some of the voices because they can drop, and then go up and down.
Exactly.
Well, with the sound bar, it enhances all the voices and everything else and the sounds and the bass sounds and all that other stuff that you can really enjoy listening to the TV a lot more. And I've just found it even sitting way back using this system and the soundbar systems, they can really enhance your listening experience. And like I say, I looked and went to a number of different stores, tried them all out, because you can go from very cheap up to very expensive.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at reviews
now. The only thing that's limiting you is your pocketbook. But I would say definitely go out and test drive them. There's a number of places, around here, Best Buy and all these other places that you can go out and listen to them and see what you're getting for your buck. But it's, for me, it was well worth it. I don't regret one penny of it. And it's the best investment I did.
Can now, I let me give you. Yours was?
Mine was roughly, I think it was around 2.25.
Okay, that's not bad. That's what I was hoping for.
Now,
okay.
Let me give you a second alternative.
Okay.
What I did was I went out and got a wireless TV headset.
Ooh.
Wireless TV headphones.
I need this for my wife.
Well, and it's because my daughter's right in the next room with her TV.
Sure.
And she, of course, has perfect hearing. So
of course.
I never hear her television set, but everybody in the house can hear mine.
Okay.
So I got wireless headsets, and mine I think was Sennheiser for about $170, but again, they go everywhere from $20 up.
Okay. I'm all set. Thanks, guys.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worster.
Still?
Yep.
And no Steve Ray.
Unbelievable. Now, Steve, the law almost caught up with him. He had a cutout pretty quick.
He's conspicuously absent.
That's right. And we have Joel, who I believe is from Pittsburgh, New York, on the line. Is that true? Joel?
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Here you are.
What can we do for you?
Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Joel.
Are you there?
I can't hear you.
Hello?
Maybe give us a call back?
Yeah, give us a call back.
Yeah, give us a call back.
All right.
That's
okay.
That was not working.
We'll come back to Joel.
As well as it could have. We'll come back to Joel. He'll call back. Sounded like a bad connection.
So I don't go for the Black Friday stuff. I used to. I used to do this with my wife. It was something we would do together. We'd take off early in the morning, go find a good deal, put it in the trunk, and come home, and then go back to sleep for the rest of the day.
Yep.
But I think I'm getting older now. And
you think?
Maybe I just have all the things I really want. Maybe my life is just much better than I think it used to be. So I just don't even worry about it anymore.
Yep. I used to do it. I only did it once. My wife used to do it all the time. I only did it once. And never again. Our next caller is Leon from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Leon. What's up?
Okay, hi. I have a problem with Windows Update. It runs almost every day, I think. And as I go through the results, most of the time I get the status as failed for things like Microsoft InfoPath, Visual Studio, Update for Word, Office 2010. Sometimes the individual programs, Microsoft Word 2010, it says it failed. And sometimes, on other days, I see some instances of success.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you. The volume is really way down.
Yeah, our volume is down and you're a little distorted. But what version of Windows do you have?
Windows 7.
Do you know which version of 7?
No.
There's premium and ultimate and.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's. I believe it's premium. Yes.
Okay.
It is premium.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And does it just say failed, or is there a specific error message?
Well, I'm looking at the status. It's the name of the part of the program, and then it gives status, importance, and date installed. In all cases, it's important. Under the status, most of the time it fails. Most days it fails. Occasionally, the 32-bit edition will succeed. Occasionally, it doesn't. The 64-bit version almost always fails.
Hmm.
So well, I'm sorry, you said the 32-bit version fails?
Most of the time.
But the 64-bit version goes in?
Always fails.
Always fails. So, oh, okay.
Okay.
Wow, there's... Well...
See if you can go in Microsoft and download a specific patch using its knowledge base number. Sometimes on the patches you'll get a specific number in parentheses. You can put that into Google and look for results that are coming from Microsoft.com and download it as a standalone installer and then try and apply that patch manually.
Okay. One thing, could I possibly just do an uninstall? Because it seems to mostly have to do with Microsoft applications like Office. If I uninstalled it and then reinstalled it, you think that might help?
I don't think that would hurt. I'm not sure it would necessarily solve the problem, but it's definitely worth a try.
Yeah.
Also, make sure that your temporary internet files, you're probably using Internet Explorer to do these updates.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Windows Update fires those off, doesn't it?
Yeah. Generally, the updates, if there's an error, there's an error number.
Yes.
And what is that number?
Well, there's lots of, it depends on, it gives KB281-7369. That's for the Microsoft InfoPath 2010 32-bit edition.
Okay, that KB number, that stands for knowledge base. That means this particular update is to solve an issue that is defined in that knowledge base article. A knowledge base is a database of changes that Microsoft has made to Windows and why they've done them.
Okay.
You can use that number that's after the KB and put that into Google and get to Microsoft's website and download that particular patch independently of the software update process and then run it manually. See if that helps. See if that completes successfully.
There's going to be several dozen of those.
Well, start with a handful. Start with two or three.
Okay.
Start with the first one, certainly. That may be the thing that's cascading all the others.
Yeah.
You know, and it generally will give you a solution. Also, these are automatic updates or are these manual updates that you're making happen yourself?
No, they're automatic.
Okay, okay. Then, yeah, I would start with that first error message, the KB number for that one, and see what it says. Also, Microsoft does have a Windows update error code list for the most common error codes.
Right.
And if you have one of those, for example, if you had Windows update error 2, that might be telling you some specific thing.
Some of these are security updates, which is of course of concern.
Yep.
Right, of course.
I'm about to post a link to the Soundbites website that is Microsoft's description of what to do when updates don't install. If you go to soundbites.org right now, you should see it there on the front page. I put it in the links you heard on the show category.
Great. Thanks for the help.
No problem.
There you go. Thanks.
Thanks, Leon. All right.
Yeah, there's a it sounds to me actually like some sort of registry.
Oh,
error somewhere.
Could
there
be.
May be a an update that got half installed,
right?
And now nothing else can go until that happens. All right, we may have Joel from Pittsburgh back on the line. Are you there, Joel?
But I can barely hear you.
Okay,
I'm not sure what to tell you about that. We
will do our best for you. Go ahead.
What's your problem?
I can't hear you. That's part of the problem. I can make out the very light sound in the background, but I was able to hear while you were on with the previous caller.
Go ahead and tell us why you're calling.
Okay. I have a laptop, Windows 7. It has VGA output. I have a Blu-ray player that will play Blu-ray discs on the laptop. When I try to hook up the laptop to a projector, the output is blocked due to, I believe, the HDCP copy protection built into Blu-ray. Is there any way to get output from that VGA port to a projector?
No. This is a short answer.
Appreciate your help.
No problem. Yeah, part of the high HDCP, the high def copy protection scheme that is baked into that system that Blu-ray also uses, is that they don't want it to be, they want the end-to-end delivery of those bits off the disc to be entirely digital from beginning to end. And typically that happens over an HDMI cable. If your laptop is new enough to have an HDMI output, and lots of newer laptops are, then you can probably connect that to a television or possibly to a high-def projector and be able to show that. But VGA, by its nature, is an analog type of connection.
Too low of a resolution.
Well, yeah, that's for starters.
Well, that's part of it, but that ain't really helping. We're talking about
But you're making what we call a DA, a digital-to-analog conversion there, and that's just not going to
It's not going to happen.
So,
the short answer is no. Going to prevent it. Sorry.
wish
we had a better answer for that.
Didn't mean anything to be so short.
It was abrupt.
Well, he was having trouble hearing us anyway, so it was
keep it simple.
Yeah, and to aggravate him in that.
Right. So. All right. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
I can barely hear you on the phone. I had the same problem the previous caller had. I could hear him and you in the broadcasting, but when you switched me over to the phone, you barely hear anything.
Okay. Well, do your best to tell us why you are calling.
Having difficulty addressing envelopes. I use Word, and when I go through the steps, typically you go to Tools, then pick envelopes and, I'm sorry, letters and mailings, and then the choices under that, one of them would be the letter wizard. And that is got a reduced contrast, and nothing happens when I click on it.
Okay, we hear you. We're searching for a solution. I'm going to let Nick talk while I take a look.
I couldn't hear him, so okay. I have no idea what he asked.
he was saying he was having difficulty addressing envelopes, and he's using Word and one of the wizards that's built in that's supposed to help with addressing envelopes. There's also a reduce contrast item that he's trying to use that is not working the way it ought to.
Well, are you only doing text?
It is normally, yes, it's text. I mean, I have these addresses all stored in a file.
I didn't hear any of that.
He has addresses stored in a file, he says.
Right. But you're talking about reduce contrast.
Yeah, I'm not sure about...
That's the choice in the drop-down box. When the system is working, it would be a normal contrast option. But the words, let me give you the words here. The word letter wizard normally would have a contrast like other choices in the drop-down box.
Right, and that generally only comes into play when there's a picture on the envelope.
There'd be no pictures involved. I use this feature many times a week, and I had the problem one day last week, unexpectedly. I don't involve pictures at all.
We will investigate this and try and post to our website.
I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you on that. Because I've only ever seen that come into play when you actually have a picture on the envelope, like right. You're putting a picture of a kitty cat in the corner or some sort of thing.
I've received envelopes of the type that I think you're describing. I've never produced any, certainly never did anything on this system with that.
All right. We will continue to investigate this. We might have to cut this call a little short, but
yeah, I'm sorry. We're having a great deal of trouble hearing you. There's a lot of
a lot
noise
of echo.
In the back.
So I'd like to say pinch hitting for Don Mattingly.
Yeah. Mattingly. Yeah. Friends of mine, I have to tell you.
I consider
this.
Myself yeah. the luckiest man.
Yeah. Friends of mine did a show in St. Louis, and one of the bits they did was the Who's On First.
Of course.
Right? Which was originally done with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Right.
So they were asked by the St. Louis Cardinals to come and do the bit. Well, if you've ever seen Abbott Costello do it or anybody do it, it's very fast-paced.
Yes.
Very quick, very boom, 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 right. boom, stepping on each other's lines, getting that all done. They walk down in the center field, the applause dies down, and they start in, "Hey, Abbott!" And the other guy starts talking. Half a second later, you hear, "Hey, Abbott!" come out Uh-oh. Over the thing. They looked at each other, and one guy just said to the other, "Keep going." And they just watched each other's mouths and did the lines. They had no idea about timing or anything because there was that half a quarter of a half a second delay.
Yeah.
In the thing.
Well, while we've been flapping our gums, Dave has been lightning fast checking over everything there is.
Right. We'll see what we can do. Vic from Irondequoit is on the line. Welcome, Vic. What's up?
Hi, guys.
Oh, that's so much, nice. This oh, is,
can you hear us?
Well done, Dr. Enright.
Very nice, sir. Very nice.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have carbonite as my primary backup, and I'm pleased I haven't lost anything so far, knock on wood.
Great.
But I have three audio files, large audio files. I tried to email to... I have three Gmail accounts and two Hotmail accounts. I use the storage. And I tried to email them, and they wouldn't do it. They said split them up. So I tried to split them up, and it still wouldn't do it. Is there any way, another alternative to email those audio files?
Yeah, there are lots of online services where you can upload a file that is too big to move via email, mm-hmm. and then you send the recipient of the email a link to those files. Are these files confidential in any way?
Yes.
Okay. That can make things a little trickier. If they're confidential, then handing them off to a third party for even a short period of time may not be what you have in mind from a security standpoint.
Right. Now, the other thing is, if you have Gmail, you also have a Google Drive account.
That is true.
You can attach files as large as 10 gigabytes.
As long as they can receive it at the other end.
To Google Drive. You can store that in Google Drive.
Right. Okay, and then send them the link.
And then just send them a link.
Yeah, Dropbox works for this too.
Yep.
And Box.com.
Okay, so I just drag them onto the Google Drive? Is that how that works?
Yeah, and then you build a link.
Yeah.
That they
now,
help you.
Google may say you've exceeded your storage and you may have to pay for a little more. That's mm-hmm. a different issue.
Right.
But just drag it onto Google Drive and you're done.
Now, my carbonate I enjoy it. Now,
you got to hold on.
I'll
please hold on. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites, a member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have somebody on the line. I've completely forgotten who this is. It's Vic from Irondequoit. Are you there?
Can I use Microsoft OneDrive in conjunction with Carbonite, or is that going to be a conflict?
Ooh, good question.
You can use it in addition.
Yes, in addition, yes.
Right, but not connected to it.
Correct, yeah, because I'm kind of a worrywart. I mean, I know Carbonite is real good, but if some third-world hacker or maybe some five-year-old kindergarten kid decides to hack it and destroy it, you know, everybody's going to lose a lot of sensitive stuff, and that's why I kind of like to have a multitude of backups.
Right. Well, I'm a belt and suspenders guy. I have more backups than you do, I'll guarantee it.
When he came into the studio, he came in backwards.
I walked in backwards. I print out all my files and stick them in my back pocket. I personally use Apple's...
Time Machine?
No.
Time Capsule?
No, the online one. iCloud.
iCloud.
Use iCloud. I use OneDrive. I use Dropbox. I use Google Drive, all of them, and I copy things to all of them, because I figure the probability of four of them going out of business.
Chances are good you'll go out of business first.
I'll go out of business first. Plus, I've got a private system that I've got set up on that I back stuff up to. Plus, I've got a second hard drive on my network.
So all of this is to say that multiple backup destinations are always a good idea.
And they can all be used in conjunction with each other.
Right. But you may not be able to copy your OneDrive stuff with Carbonite up to Carbonite's cloud, per se.
Now, with the OneDrive, when you install it, does it automatically take stuff from your hard drive?
No.
Or do you have to put stuff in there?
I don't use it, so I'm not sure.
You have to put stuff into it. But what I did, there's an X copy command, which will copy all the stuff from one directory to another directory, so I can copy stuff that way. Plus, there's a command called at, which you should look up and pay attention to, because what it lets you do is say, at 3 a.m., do this batch file.
Neat.
So that at 3 a.m. every day, for those of you who have Linux systems, it works
like
very much like cron jobs. Okay. It's a cron job.
All right.
They just call it at, A-T.
I get it.
It's not the at symbol, it's A-T.
Uh-huh.
So you can say at 3 a.m. do this or whatever. And that's from the command line. There's also a GUI thing that I never use.
I have good news. CrashPlan, a competitor to Carbonite, is offering a 50% off code this weekend only,
nice.
And it ends tomorrow. So if you wanted a second cloud-based destination, CrashPlan will get you set up and started. I think you can back up to 10 different machines on this one account. You get a year's worth of service, and you can head over to their website for more details about that.
Yeah, I never heard of it, but I'm going to be looking that up quick.
Yeah, it's a good one. I've been using it for several years. It's the one that I use for a lot of my clients. It's the one that I'm pitching for using during my day job here. So it's one that I trust and I really like.
So
their
I can
service.
Put in Google CrashPlan in Google and it'll come up with.
I just did. Yes, CrashPlan, all one word.
Oh, that's all right. One word. Okay.
Yeah, check it out.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, guys.
You got it.
Thanks. It's from a company called Code 42.
Yep.
Yep. Code 42.
Hike.
Exactly. But yeah, I personally believe you cannot have enough backup, much less too much backup.
Every time I go talk about backups, I always bring up the 3-2-1 rule. The 3-2-1 rule says you got to have 3 copies of anything you care about on 2 different kinds of media, and one of them needs to be off-site. That way you're covered against natural disasters or 3 feet of snow on your roof, like over in Buffalo.
That's right.
and you're protected against any one kind of media not being readable in the future.
That's right.
Like if you did all your backups to writable CDs and your new fancy computer doesn't have a CD drive anymore, then you're stuck.
All right. Honestly, pay attention. Raise your hands out there in radio land. If you have a stack of 3.5-inch or 5.25-inch floppies that
or
you can't even read anymore. Or 8-inch floppies. I've got a couple of those. I have a Bernoulli disk that I can't put in anything anymore.
There you go.
I have zip drives that I can't put in anything
anymore.
Zip.
Jazz, SideQuests, forget about it.
Jazz and SideQuests, absolutely.
Yeah. It's been a while.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for what you do, and happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, and you too.
Happy Thanksgiving
Thank you.
To you, too.
Bob. And, Nick, I bought a Chromebook and just love it.
Good for you.
I had some trouble going from Apple to the Chromebook, but I purchased your book on Kindle, which was absolutely fabulous.
That's what I love to hear. Thank you, Bob. And now I need a review. Do a review.
I'll write one this afternoon.
Thank you.
Cool.
But I really appreciate what you fellows were saying about Target being open for Thanksgiving. And these folks that work there being threatened if they don't work. It's terrible, and I won't shop. But I noticed they had an iPad Air 2 on sale for $489 minus $150 gift card.
Yeah.
But Best Buy today has the first Air for $318, and you could pick it up right now. And
okay.
I'm wondering, is it...
What's the big difference between the two?
Exactly, yes.
Well, you have called the right time because I have had both of those within the past month.
Great.
The big difference is significantly, I don't know if I'd say significantly, noticeably faster performance in the 2 versus the 1, and the 1 was noticeably faster than its previous generation iPad 4.
Mm.
You get the same screen. You get additional memory behind the scenes, so the computer switches, or the iPad switches between applications more quickly.
The 2.
That's right. For the same price point, you get twice as much storage in the iPad Air 2. You get a better camera. It's 8 megapixels versus 5. And you also get what's called Touch ID, which is a fingerprint reader that's built into the home button that allows you to do things like unlock the device just with your fingerprint and also buy things from the iTunes App Store with just a fingerprint rather than having to enter in a password.
So would you, for $100... Is it worth it to spend it to get the newer one, or?
I think it's probably worth it, and if you go to sell it in a year when the next model comes out, I suspect you'll get absolutely most, if not all, of that $100 back.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good.
Yeah, we...
Nice to go out with an easy question.
Exactly. Well, I would like to spend just a moment, now that Bob has segued into that. I have written 2 books.
What?
I have.
And
both of them are available on Kindle. One is called Google Docs, Word Processing in the Cloud. And the other is called I Just Bought a Chromebook, Help.
Now what?
And what's interesting is the Google Docs book
not
is...
oops.
Yeah, oops.
I just
not
bought
oops.
A Chromebook, oops.
Oops, no. It's, no.
How do like I turn your Chromebook?
Like for him, though, he was doing a big shift going
sure.
from a Mac
yeah.
to a
yeah.
Chromebook.
Yeah. Yep.
And a Chromebook is totally different than...
Well, and that's the point. And what's interesting is the Google Docs book is selling okay, but the Chromebook book is selling actually very well.
Good.
And not that I'll actually be multimillionaire off of it, but
well,
you know, yeah.
if you can,
you'll buy donuts next
it's
week.
It's a 99-cent book. It's not like
so you're buying donuts.
Yeah,
then.
I'm buying
dollars to donuts.
Next
huh?
week? No, I think next week is Steve. But it's called I Just Bought a Chromebook. Help! It's by me, Nick Francesco. You can buy it at Kindle. You can buy it at Amazon, obviously.
Right.
And I'm very pleased at how well it's selling. I if any of those of you who have bought it, please leave a review. I would like to say leave an honest review, but please leave a really good review.
That would be nice. 5 stars if you could spare them.
Hint. Exactly. So I'm just very honored that people are actually buying this book.
That's a lot of fun.
It was fun to write, and I'm working on another one. So,
and if you have ideas about ways to improve the book for the second edition,
let me know, because there will be multiple editions, and I've already made a couple of changes, a couple of editions. So, anybody who just bought it, I think anybody who bought it gets the download of the update.
Okay.
Mm.
Well, are you doing a book signing anywhere?
You know, that's the one thing it's hard to do with an e-book is actually sign it.
Well, you just have a cyber meeting at a cafe.
Oh, I suppose I can put up a signed edition for more money.
There you
like
go.
If you want if for $4.99, mm-hmm. you get my 99-cent book with a signature.
Right.
There you go.
Pretending my signature is worth $4.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
That's yeah.
They'll
exactly.
do it just to support you.
Sure, that would be nice, too.
Keep you writing.
Right.
Cool. So are you going to do a third title?
I am going to do a third title. I'm not going to tell you what it is yet until I finish writing it.
Okay.
But I'm partway through it. Life got in the way for a couple of weeks, but...
Well, we'll be looking for that.
Yeah, I'll certainly let everybody know when it's done. That music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester. I'm Nick Francesco. Dennis, God bless you. You've come in two out of the last 3 weeks, and we've been very, very honored to have you here. But listen, don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week, and there's some gems in there. Michael is here with a very large bat to keep him in line. I don't know if it's big enough, but it's a good start. And we'll be back to visit you in just 166 hours. So enjoy your week. Have a magnificent, pleasant, quiet, family-filled Thanksgiving. And we'll see you next week on a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Happy Thanksgiving.